Welcome to Podnos Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 255, Brand Recommendations. I'm your host, Jeff Halish. This is our live call-in show for computer repair techs. We answer your questions on running your computer repair business. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. The Computer Repair Podcast is brought to you by Ninja, the simple-to-use remote monitoring and management solution. Try it free at ninjarmm.com/10off. Let me introduce the co-hosts. We have John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. How are you doing, John?
It's a great day in America, Jeff.
Amen, brother. And also, we have a Brad Torrey, again, from TTCS Computer Services. Welcome again, Brad.
Hey, great to be here. Glad to see you guys survive that new winter cold front coming in.
Whatever. All right, John, why don't you go ahead and start us off with a tip or story that we could learn from?
Yeah, that's how funny, Bradford. You're lucky this is a G-rated show. So quick, just two quick tips. One that I just stumbled upon. I don't know why, but I clicked on my spam folder the other day, and I went in there, and I just happened to notice that two of my old Hogue clients that I was receiving a bunch of spam from them. You know how you get those. Sometimes they're Joe Jobs, or it looks like from them, but obviously somebody had gotten into their Yahoo or AOL accounts. So I guess my tip is, you know, don't forget to check your spam folder once in a while, because I reached out to them. I gave them both a call on their phone and said, hey, I think your account's compromised. You might want to do something, even though they're not current clients. But, you know, that might be a good thing to check. Maybe you can set up a filter or some sort of search to check your, I don't know, just take a peek in your spam folder every once in a while. You never know what's going on. And then on the tech side, I thought this was kind of cool. American football, college football. Jeff, you can just tune out, take a little nap here. But I'm in Big Ten country, and the Ohio State University, not that I'm a fan, but they have this little thing where they bring the band out at the beginning of the game, and the marching band spells Ohio. Very cool. Ohio State fans, actually, Michigan University created that, just so you know. But I digress. The funny thing is I don't know if everybody knew, but on iPhones, there was a little glitch where if you spelled the word Ohio, it would turn an autocorrect on and change the A-I to an A. So during the game, the Ohio fans scream out and hold up these huge cards that say, O-H-I-O. So at the game this week, they did O-H-A-O. So I thought that was kind of cool. And I got some links I'll put in the show notes that I thought was funny. But, you know, a little tech digression, which I thought was kind of cute. And I thought was pretty timely and quick on the fans. So that's my little two tips. Check your spam folder. And if we're going to talk about Ohio State, if we have to, then let's pick on Apple at the same time.
Awesome. All right, Brad, what do you got for us this week?
Look, I'll have you guys know that I had to use a blanket last night while I was sleeping. So I don't want to hear about... All right. So I don't have like a greatest tip or anything this week, but definitely came to mind that I need to stay on myself to be organized and to like wrap stuff up. You're like on site doing a job, and you've been there for hours, and the customer is exhausting, maybe, or the job is exhausting for whatever reason. And like, you know that the rest of it can be wrapped up remotely, and you've got other demands going on, and you could just bail and go wrap, like take care of something else, and then go back home, get to your desk, get remotely, go on and finish that first job. But then that gets really hard to kind of circle back to sometimes, because you've got other things going on. You get tired. I've told you before, I can't work like 12 hours straight anymore. Like, I just used to, but I can't. And so just finish it. Just suck it up and sit down and finish the job. The guy behind your back talking, asking dumb questions. It's fine. Just wrap it up and finish it, because you'll thank yourself later when you don't have to go back to that job. And just like keeping your tools, your desk, your paperwork, everything, just kind of take a second to be organized, and you'll just, future you will be like, oh, past me did a good job. I thank myself. So
that's good. Yeah. Organization and finishing the job. Very good. All right. So, first of all, I would like to say yesterday was, Veterans Day, and it was November 11th, 2017. I just want to say happy Veterans Day to all the veterans out there that have served and are serving currently. Without you, we wouldn't be able to say the wonderful things on this show, which is pretty much whatever I want. So I definitely appreciate that. So just thinking about all the veterans out there that I served with over the years, and so definitely appreciated that. Number two, I was just thinking about, a lot of people have asked about hardware diagnostics. And we all use different things for trying to diagnose hard drives, motherboards, different things like that. One of the things that I had done a long time ago, which I'd kind of forgotten about, was that you can go to actually HP's website for their diagnostic utility, which is the same utility that they put on their machines, or pretty close. And so you can actually download that and load it up, and it works with UEFI and works great. It does the same things. It'll test that equipment out, and it's free. You can definitely download it. Now, I've never tried it on another computer, so I think that it will only work on HP's, whatever their configurations are. But I thought that was a good free diagnostic utility that you could use, especially if you've got an HP machine and it doesn't have the diagnostic utility built in, which a lot of people are saying that they don't. And it's very rare that I run across one nowadays that doesn't have the diagnostic utility built in, unless somebody wiped the drive and, you know, redid it. But other than that, if it's got the original stuff on it, usually I can get to the diagnostic utility and run it, especially in a pre-boot. All right, so that was my tip. Let's go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll come back to our main topic. Our show today is brought to you by Ninja, the remote monitoring and management solution to help you become more efficient, more productive, and more profitable. With Ninja, you can have a faster fixed response time and offer preventative maintenance to your customers. Ninja understands what you need to run your business, which is why their RMM solution is integrated with tools you use every day. Ninja provides competitive pricing, patch management, antivirus, email SMS alerting, third-party patch management, which is really cool. You can be up and running quickly with minimum training time. That's what I like. You have TeamViewer integration for that remote support. It's one solution for managed and non-managed clients alike. Network visibility inside the RMM. Find out what's going on inside the network before your customer even knows. Easy to read dashboards. And it also has a powerful device search where you can create custom queries and export the list to show your customers. Also, there's an executive style report showing important system metrics such as health score, software added and removed, hardware changes, and team viewer connections. Ninja is offering Podnuts a free 30-day trial, and when you decide to buy, a 10% discount. To take advantage of this offer, go to ninjarmm.com/10off. All right, so let's go into our main topic. And this was brought to us by none other than John Dubinsky. It says, basically, what brands do we use in our business? Do you stick with one, or are you all over the place and just get the cheapest thing you can find for your client? But this was prompted by an email that came in that John's going to read to us and talking about this subject, and we're going to kind of take it down a rabbit hole and see what we can come up with.
Yeah, I can't claim the topic title. Chris Riviera, Crystal Ball, down in Florida, sent out this email and originally addressed it to our friend Paco and myself. So Chris says, hey, it was great hanging out with you at the Unconvention. Yep, that was a good time. Since that trip, I've had an increase in the amount of IT work as a part-time business owner. I'm being asked for desktop and laptop recommendations. I've done a few in the past, and now I'm getting a lot of requests. I know both of you guys are using different models like Dell Latitudes, Optiplex, and Lenovo ThinkPads and ThinkCenters. I'm the Dell guy. Paco's the Lenovo guy. I just wanted to know, how do you price your equipment? Or if you add extra to cover some cost or add services when quoting the equipment? I'm dealing with residential clients at the moment with a handful of business clients. I charge the client for the equipment and add my services into the pricing so I know the equipment they purchased from me is being updated and contains antivirus software. The benefits of being part-time is that I'm able to choose my client and charge as much as possible, as John would say. I missed that the first time I read that. yes, charge as much as humanly possible. I usually don't get any questions about pricing because I usually just pay it and value my services. An example from Chris would be $500 for a computer, $350 for yearly maintenance plan, or an $850 total. I just want to know what you do and if I should be charging anything that I'm not. I'm open to suggestions because I value your opinion. And again, thanks. Shout out to Cristobal or Chris Riviera down in Florida.
Very cool. So, John, talking about, obviously, everybody has their cant on what they use, whether it's a Dell line, an HP line, a Lenovo line, or whatever in between. And people usually tend to like that brand. They get to know it, like it, trust it. And that's usually what they sell to their customers. But as far as what Chris was asking, what are some of the things that you look for as far as pricing? Because I know you do things a little bit different than maybe what some other businesses do out there.
Well, if I started at the beginning of the question, I chose the Dell line probably because that's what I always used at the beginning. And I think I probably got lucky because at least in the corporate version of most of their products, the serviceability is there. It's easy to crack the case open. Most of the time it's toolless with the laptops. It's usually one panel at the bottom. You know, unfortunately, the newer systems we're getting, the XPSs or the Ultrabooks and the Latitude line are all in ones. So the serviceability is going way down there. And that's why I send them to you, Jeff. But, my pricing is, yes, a little bit different.
We won't talk about the very, very thin ribbon cables they use nowadays, too.
You notice I didn't bring that up. Keyboard broke. So I use all-you-can-eat pricing with my clients. So I have a monthly contract with everybody that I service. So my pricing is a little bit different because pretty much I sell equipment to my clients at cost. So there's no conflict of interest. I charge them a flat rate for service. And then when I say, hey, we need something, there's no conflict of interest. We just kind of do it because it's a necessity. I'm not making any money on it. They're not thinking I'm needing to meet some sort of sales quota or not. But if I roll back the sands of time and I go to previously, there's two things that I would handle. I still get a lot of residential requests because a lot of people will ask me, hey, what should I do at home or something like that? Usually what I do is I refer them to an Amazon purchase link, because I don't want to be really the first tier of support for that home equipment. So I'll let Dell handle that warranty. You know, I might help them up. Hey, bring your old laptop into the office sometime. And while I'm doing something else, I'll transfer the data for you. You know, we're talking about a manager or a business owner or something like that. If I have a really tight relationship and we're going to be using that equipment at home for business purposes, then they get the same rollout that we do in the office as far as security and all that kind of good stuff. And then, you know, I might make a couple of pennies on that, Amazon referral link, if you're an Amazon associate or something like that. You're certainly not going to get rich off of that. But if I was going to go back to the day where I did residential, I might try to do something where I wasn't responsible for the warranty work. And then when the clients called me for warranty help, I would still be able to bill and charge for that, was my concern or my thinking behind that. Somebody might straighten me out and think about that differently. But if I sold a laptop, they bought it direct from Amazon, you know, then, you know, we could talk about, well, maybe you want to call Dell and get an extended Dell warranty directly from Dell. When they need help, I'd still be charging them my hourly rate no matter what it was.
Right. And I kind of like that approach, and I've kind of pretty much taken that approach myself. I do myself, I charge a little bit in the equipment a lot of times. And usually it's just moving up. I don't have it's not a 10, 20, 30%. It's literally to make it easier on the customer and myself, because there's three types of people in the world. There's those that are good at math and those that aren't. And that tells you where I'm at. So, but with that being said, a lot of times I just move it up to the next, whatever the next tier is. If it's, $189 my price, I'll charge them $200. Just to keep the math simple and go along that way.
Before we let Bradford chime in too, Chris did, you know, Chris and I traded a couple emails, and he did write back to me and say something to the effect that, you know, he really likes to control what even his residential clients are purchasing. Obviously, I'm on that bandwagon as well, if you can standardize, but you can still do that on a referral basis as well. So, you know, always push them to either a Dell XPS or, you know, a Dell Inspiron if you want to stay in that Dell support world, or HP or Lenovo or whatever you're doing. So you can do that even when they suggest just a referral if you're not actually selling that equipment to them. So that is possible as well. I'm not, certainly not saying my way is the only way, but that's probably how I would skin the residential cat.
Okay. Very cool. And Brad, how do you do it?
John and I aren't too different in the in our approaches, although I actually now don't have any customers on an all-you-can-eat kind of plan, which I've done in the past. But when I was on an all-you-can-eat plan with a customer, we had very similar philosophies. Like, I'm going to provide you with everything because I have to support everything, but I'm going to sell it to you at my cost so that it's not like me double-dipping. I'm making my money off of our arrangement. So now I'm just supplying with what you need. And that worked out okay. I mean, but I mostly just find that because of the market that I think I've sort of self-selected for my business, it's not the little tiny guy that won't spend money, but it's definitely the smaller end of the market. It's the smaller shops. Aside from like when I get into a restaurant chain where now we're kind of in a, you know, we've got several locations and it's kind of a big operation, it's still sort of a small environment, right? There's still only like 8 POS terminals and a manager computer. So it's like still less than 10 units per location. So I kind of go into that direction. Like, I've like 20 and under is probably where I've arrived at with most of my customers. So what we find is in that market, we have to be a little flexible. So we figured out, okay, like, where can we be flexible, but still draw a line and still make sure that our customers have stuff that we can live with. So, generally, if it's like a router or, you know, some piece of networking equipment or anything along those lines, we will sell that to the customer. If it's a PC, we usually will typically give them like, all right, look, here's a link, you go buy that. Like, and so we limit them to, okay, well, what's your, like, what are we looking at? What's your category? What's your budget? What are we, can we do $1,000? Yeah. Okay. Then you want an Anthony computer. If you, you know, if it's just going to be an accounting machine, but if I can get you to spend that like $1,000 on just the desktop, just the tower, you're getting a Remus PC. And then if I can't, then we'll, you know, okay, fine, we'll roll down. We'll find the best deal we can on one of the business lines, not just the consumer grade, but on OptiPlex or ThinkPad or Think whatever. And then HP has their business line. And actually, I recently just got my hands on, I haven't really ever liked an HP PC. I mean, a laptop. And I finally actually got to spend some time with an EliteBook, and they're pretty solid. You get an EliteBook with an i7 in it, and it's a pretty nice experience. Like, they're hefty. I feel like I could hurt somebody with it. You know, it's not going to break. So anyway, we basically will just steer them towards, you know, a business line of any of the big three, with the proper specs. We kind of force them into a funnel and go, okay, now you're going to buy this. We've kind of arrived at it together. So it's a little bit more democratic because we're not always able to get them to spend the budget that would really be what we would recommend, but we get them to something where we can all kind of agree that it's good enough. And sometimes we just get lucky and we send them a proposal and they just approve everything. And we're like, that was way easier than it should have been, but great. You know, we're happy. But yeah, we get a lot of mixed environments. We walk in and they've already got a Netgear residential grade switch and, you know, things like that. And, you know, they've already got an AV and it's like a paid for version of one of the free residential ones. And I don't necessarily feel that that's good enough. Or it's just kind of a waste. It's like, well, AV is already sort of on the fence. Are you paying? Are you going to? I don't want to pick one out, but like I've seen paid for Avast, and I'm just like, really? You gonna pay for that? Okay. Or they're on an email platform. And so because of inheritance, I've got two different providers of Host Exchange. I've got Office 365 and I've got G Suite. We're thankfully off of all on-prem Exchange servers. But I'd like to standardize on one, but that's a dream that's not going to be realized entirely. And then with that, we sort of like go, okay, well, for most people, I think G Suite's pretty good. I like G Suite. It works for us. It works for the couple of people that have it that we support. But if you really, really like Outlook and like you really want to be in that Microsoft environment and maybe SharePoint really sounds great to you, and you also want to use the Office 365 to be the licensing conduit for your Office products like Word and Excel, well, then you know what? Office 365 is probably a viable option, and I'm totally willing to support that. That's fine. So we sort of do that like a pre-interview of like, okay, what are these things that are important to you? How can we... And then we'll pick between those two. But trying to get off of Hosted Exchange only because it's both a third platform between those two hosted email providers, and it can come from multiple places. So the three, we have two customers on AppRiver on different versions of Hosted Exchange. So it's a little different. And then we have someone on Rackspace with Hosted Exchange, which is entirely different. And it's not that hard to figure out, but it's like, if I get a new tech coming in and I want to try to show them how to make a change, I have to train them six different ways when someone just wants to like update their password on their email or do something like that. So that, I think the main topic of, do you have like a brand that you prefer, or, and why do you want to hone in and try to focus every client on the same thing? Yeah. You look at all these different email platforms, and that's a great example. If someone wasn't quite as, it takes me time to go through and funnel through it. And if someone's not quite me, you know, I mean, not to be like, not that I'm the greatest, but I tend to like to be able to figure stuff out. If someone's a little bit more like, I need the process and I need the steps, then that's just a ton of training. And then it becomes less, I don't know, it's easier to support. And it's better for the clients if we know what we're doing when they call. So
Bradford, you are the greatest.
Thanks, John.
Hey, I want to go back to that. I think at least in the business environment, and this sounds kind of corny, I guess, but really, if it makes my job easier, I really think it's a benefit that rolls forward to our clients. So if it's easy for me to support it, if it's easy for me to respond to a problem you might have with it, if it's easy for us to get support from the manufacturer, or if they're there for us or the vendor, if it's easy for me to do those things, I think that's just better for the client. And I agree with Bradford. It's a long time coming. How long have I been doing this, Jeff, to get standardization in place? But I think it's something you start to engage with your clients. If you're going to start getting business clients, or you should start that process right away. You've always have those clients that are looking for the great deal. And, you know, I always laugh because some of them really try to do that. I remember I walked into one of my clients and they had three brand new laptops, and they're like, hey, we got these laptops. They're a great deal. Look, and they're Dells too, because we know you like Dell. But they were like the cheapest, you know, no NIC card in them, wireless only, not even a core processor, some sort of Intel PCM CM6940. You know, and I was like, God, I love you guys for trying. Thanks for, you know, at least hearing what I said, not understanding it, but I mean, at least we're on the same page. But you do know that, you know, these only have like 16 gig hard drives, and, you know, God bless them for trying. But, you know, it's an ongoing thing that you just kind of sort of got to beat that drum all the time to say, hey, yeah, it would be really cool to have those. But, you know, this is your business. We want your business to run. You want to get one of those from home for home? That'd be sweet. So, you know, simplify it is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I've got some refurbished PCs that I'm working with because somebody found a deal online and they didn't, and they're like, yeah, I found these Optuplexes and blah, they're great. And they're like, and I open it up and like, these are refurbished. They're literally wrapped around in bubble wrap and like thrown into an old, used Amazon box. That's what they received. So good. This is going to be fun.
I'm not 100% against refurb, but it's always funny that you get the refurb from 11 years ago that they got the special deal on. I mean, if you can get a refurb that maybe is one series older, depending on how you're rolling that out and what you expect from it, okay, you know, maybe depending on where we're deploying it and what we're doing with it. But, you know, it's funny. Yeah, look, it's a Dell Optiplex from 1998. Yay. You know, and Rick brings up a great thing in the chat. He says, I wonder if nowadays we should be considering hardware as a service with simple in-house built systems for business workstations, monthly rental maintenance, something like that, where we provide everything to our business clients. They don't buy them. We buy them and we lease them to them monthly. You know, I've thought about that. And I've also thought about what Bradford said, that maybe I should just get out of selling PCs since there's no margin in that for them and just have my customers buy them direct.
Yep. It cuts down on the capital expense and the direct responsibility. So,
heck, if it shipped to them, it would cut down on my recycling expense, you know, period. So,
well, but the problem with that is you're going to have to, you still have to set these things up. So, the convenience factor is once you get it in office, you can set it up before you actually roll it out to the client. Versus, I know there's a lot of techs, myself included, that end up going out on the job and having to configure stuff on the fly. And that is absolutely not any fun whatsoever, especially for a business client. Sometimes it's unavoidable, but I think when we're talking about too, when we're talking about what we inherit and then what we can push our clients to afterwards. Like if a client is on a different hosted exchange using AppRibber, SureWeb, whatever, I think we should probably standardize with one and maybe move them over to ours eventually. So that we can go, hey, everything is going to be the same. I can support you better, quicker. It's a good thing for you. It's a good thing for me. And I know a lot of people are going, yeah, but that's a pain. I got to switch that over. I understand that. Same thing with computers. When you're buying those computers and you're saying, okay, I understand what you had here, but here's what we're going to use moving forward because I want you to have a good experience. And even like John was talking about with some of those computers that the customer had bought, it is so hard to explain to the customer that, listen, do you want to have a good computing experience? Or do you just want to grab your lunch fork and just plunge it into your eye day after day after day after day? And that's really what you got to get over to the clients, is I want your computing experience to be wonderful. To where you're going, I'm not having to wait on something. You know, Brad, you were talking about accounting and having a Remus computer or a Remus workstation built. And I'll be honest with you, that's probably the only way they should be done is with a higher end computer. Because how many times has a database from an accounting software just slow as molasses when it runs? It's terrible. But you know what? If you've got enough PC power behind it, that thing will run and you can get your job done.
Even Excel, if you get an elaborate sheet, it's going to sit there and crunch for a while. But if you give it the resources it wants, then you don't even know that it's having to do all these manual recalculations on the back end because everything just works. So,
and quality products, quality vendors. I know everybody's probably tired of me talking about Calyptics, but they saved my butt twice last week. Quality vendor, called them up. I was setting up two VPNs, one to Germany, one to China. You know, huge communication barrier. They got on the phone. They were able to simplify things a little bit with me. I mean, it was great. So there's a savior, you know, about choosing a quality vendor. And then I'll go back to Arachnus. Jeff and I were just talking. You know, they've got a firmware update or a firmware bug. So if you have the auto restart set in your Arachnus AN300 router, you're going to want to turn that off because it will cause the device to boot loop eventually. So go in there and disable that auto restart. But, you know, it was easy and I can do that. I don't have to make a visit. I don't even have to remotely log in. I can do that from the overseer control panel. So, you know, all these vendors are going to have problems. You're going to have problems with all of them. It may be a quality vendor. It might as well be a quality vendor and a quality product that you're dealing with versus trying to get somebody, a hold of somebody at Netgear about a home router that probably will never be upgraded ever.
Now, Chris was talking about what he was charging as far as, you know, the computer, a maintenance service and all that. But let me ask you guys a question. What when we're talking about a laptop or a desktop, and I know a lot of times we're selling the business class lines to our business customers, but in your opinions, what is the minimum price that you would pay for a good working laptop, or the minimum price you would pay for a good working desktop?
I'm thinking laptop. I mean, this is hard because sometimes you get good deals and stuff, but I'm thinking $800 on laptop minimum, probably more, but I look, all right, can you get, at this point, your SSD is mandatory, especially in a laptop where it gets jostled around. And then desktop, we can locally pick up at Micro Center still, like an Optiplex for $550. And that's about it. I mean, you better have your own monitor, keyboard, and mouse, or you're going to pick one up, and that's going to be more. But $550 for the tower.
You know, a lot of times it's not really price. It's tough to say price, but I'm thinking $500 to $1,000 because, you know, with spiffs or depending on distribution or what you're getting. But I think it's Core i5, 8 gigs of RAM, and an SSD is probably the base is where I start for either a laptop or desktop.
Well, and I think for either one of those, though, if you take the Core i5 SSD and all that kind of stuff, I think you can almost correlate the $500 for a desktop and $800 for a laptop with all that stuff involved nowadays. So really, it does kind of correlate together as far as, and I would agree with everybody, too, is...
And we're talking about a corporate desktop, too. I'm talking about an Optiplex. I'm not talking about an Inspiron that might have those specs, because right. There is a difference.
Yes,
a big difference.
And the other thing too is a lot of people don't realize this, but even from the laptop to a desktop, a lot of people are going, why is my laptop not run as well? It has a Core i5 and my desktop has a Core i5. They're not the same processors. You have a low power processor most of the time that is in a Core i5, and a lot of times they even cut some of the cores down just so that it lasts longer on the battery, and it doesn't heat up as much. So you're talking about a night and day difference a lot of times, but a lot of people don't see that correlation. All they see is Core i5, Core i7, Core i3, forget about it. But with those other two, you got to be careful with that.
Yeah, you're not comparing apples to apples. You're talking about one machine that's built for maximizing battery life over the long term and another one that's built for maximizing performance. So, I mean, obviously you can tweak both to try to make them match, you know, reduce the energy consumption of the desktop and try to increase the performance of the laptop, but, you know, kind of apples to oranges.
Well, and how many of us, I've done this for years with a laptop, where the first thing I do is, you know, it wants to go into sleep mode, which I'm sorry, in any operating system, sleep mode just absolutely sucks. It just doesn't work all the time. It'll work some of the time, but it does not absolutely work all the time. So to me, it's more of a pain in the butt. So a lot of times I go in and shut that off. But it's funny, even on a laptop, if I want to get my most out of my laptop when I'm running it, I put it in the high performance mode. Hey, let's let this thing just run as fast and hard and turn the screen up as bright as possible. Because a lot of times I've ran into situations where you have this stuff on a low power setting, and it's like, wait, why is this thing like running like complete and utter garbage? Well, because you have it on a lower power setting. That's why. So, yeah, a lot of it's tough.
You want to get good use out of your stuff. I mean, when I used to use my laptop as my primary and I would just dock it when I got to my desk, and that was my primary machine, I'd sit there and plug it into power while every time it was set down. And every time I sat down at my desk. So a lot of times it's just sitting there on power all the time. And that's not best practice for a laptop to have the battery constantly be sitting on a charger. But I don't care because I don't want to sit there and think about it. And when the battery craps out, I'll buy a new one. Or at that point, maybe it's time to get a new laptop. Like, I just need my stuff to work.
Well, actually, nowadays with your modern laptops, though, especially your business class stuff, even a consumer grade, the battery charger will actually stop charging at a certain percentage anyway. So you don't have this problem of overcharging like you did, I don't know how, 5, 6, 7 years ago. It's nowhere near that. So you can, and people ask me this all the time, leave the computer on or shut it off? It depends. But for me, I'm going to always leave the computer on. Why? Because I want the updates to be done in the background at night when I'm sleeping. And so that when I go to do something, I don't have these things popping up. Most people will shut their laptops down. And this is the problem that I get calls all the time where the customer goes, hey, this thing popped up and it's not working right and something's going on. And I go in there and there's like this huge update that's wanting to update during their workday. You know, and it's like, yeah, and this is from, you know, residential customers, but letting them know, hey, it's just a big update. We had to get this thing down. So you go and you update it and everything's fine for the next foreseeable future until it happens again. So a lot of times I just tell people, leave it on.
Most often when we have like an RMM kind of third party patch management tool having issues, it's on a laptop and it's because it's not on all the time.
Or they don't ever reboot the machine. So I guess from Chris's standpoint, you can either charge for your hardware or charge a minimal amount, or you could do the standard, I'm going to charge you 30% plus my hourly rate. I personally think, along with these guys, I think you can make more using a good hourly rate versus having to charge these small margins for a lot of this hardware equipment. And like John said, you take the conflict of interest out. Listen, for a business client, I want you to have this equipment because it's the best equipment that you're going to get the best use out of, you're going to be happy with, and I'm going to be able to support it so much quicker. So it's a win-win, and I don't really need to make money off of it. I'm going to get money for installing it, setting it up, doing all the things that I need to do. So to me, that's the way to go, in my opinion. But you can do it however you want.
One thing that we've, like when you talk about conflict of interest, and like let's say you get a Dell computer, and it's got a warranty, but that requires someone to call tech support, go through the steps with them to verify the issue, set up the RMA, either if you have the on-site support, which you should have, then you know you schedule that, and they come out and fix it. But either way, usually they want someone qualified, so me, to actually do that. If I sold them the computer and put a markup in there, am I kind of on the hook for absorbing that support? Can I charge them hourly for that? I don't know. But if they bought the computer and they didn't get any markup from me, then I have no problem charging them for the time it takes me to set up that RMA for them. So, you know, I don't know. Not that it's cut and dry, but that sort of makes it easier for me. I don't have a problem because I didn't sell them with a, you know, some kind of a profit margin, the PC. I just sort of told them what they should get, and they got to buy it at the retail rate that I was going to pay anyway, because I'm not a Dell partner, because it's a pain in the butt to become a Dell partner, and I haven't done it yet.
I might even tell you not to do it.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. I mean, I've had that thought too.
Why is that, John?
It is a pain in the butt, and you know the benefits that you get from it aren't great. I mean, unless you're doing huge volumes or large purchase blocks, like if you're doing $35,000 deals, you can get some huge discounts. But if you're buying 1 to 10 at a time, I mean, you're better just finding either an online reseller, because you'll probably get better pricing from them than you will Dell Direct. You know, it's no secret, it's 3%. That a Dell reseller gets by default off posted pricing. Now they do have, you know, you can go through distribution like Tech Data or something like that, but a lot of the times you'll still get better pricing on low quantities just going to somebody like a PC Nation or, you know, even finding something on Amazon for new product, and then you can slap a Dell warranty on it and be good. So, you know, be careful. I'd never put like a Square Trade or some other warranty on there. You know, I'd always go Dell Direct, but, you know, I've toyed with the thought of maybe trying to differentiate myself and going with maybe, you know, ASUS's business line. They have a nice business line of products, or somebody else that has a much more friendly reseller program and actually will let you sign up without doing $250,000 in products to be on their, you know, the repair depot for what you sell as well. So, but you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I'm not sure if I'm going to change vendors when I've got, you know, 850 of them deployed out there. So,
right. Yeah. You've already, and I think that happens a lot of times, is in the beginning, you kind of pick who you want to use because it's already who you're using, or you just fell into it and made a decision at some point. But yeah, there comes a point where if you're going to just chase the lowest amount out there, or the lowest reseller out there, the lowest price for a product out there, I think you're gonna waste a lot of time and a lot of effort.
Yeah, I think that I'm agree. I think that's the worst thing you could do. I like the Dell products. I like the Optiplex. I like the Latitudes. I have no problem with the products. Dell server support is fantastic. You know, PowerEdge servers, I love those. Desktop support, if you can get it in the U.S., it depends on when you call and just the luck of the draw. It's great. I've had good and bad with overseas support, but I think that's in general what we get from everybody. So, you know, overall, I don't have anything. You know, nobody ever got fired for buying Dell products either. So it's a pretty easy sell. You know, if I try to sell and I don't know, I'll pick an Acer or a Asus or somebody like that, or a lesser known brand, you know, there's sometimes questions. So, but you know, you have to, you know, is selling Dell product going to make you a differentiator? No, because everybody can sell them or they can buy them wherever they want. So you're going to have to focus on something else to differentiate yourself out there in the market.
Yeah, people ask me all the time, what is the best computer brand out there? And I'm like, they're all about the same. When you look at processors and things that are going inside these machines and actually where a lot of the motherboards are made, it's funny because the motherboards are made on the exact same assembly lines that all the brands pretty much use. And they're made specifically for that particular run of laptop, desktop, whatever. But the reality is, you know, as far as capacitors and things down at that level, they're using a lot of the same stuff.
Chips on the board.
And, you know,
they're all about the same.
If you break it all down, I would be willing to bet that 90% of customers could care less. They want to come in, turn the computer on. They want it to operate correctly. They don't want to have any problems. They want to get through their day without it having, you know, without it being a problem in the day. They're going to, you know, business owners just like us have other problems. We want our equipment to fire up and work. It's the exact same thing our customers expect. You know, they don't want to get a virus. They don't want the motherboard to die. They just want it to be on. They want it to be fast. They want it to be productive and move on. They don't want to think about it. That's why we're here. We'll focus on the IT, let them focus on their business.
Exactly. That's probably the hardest thing to do, though, isn't it, John? Is like, why did you let so-and-so actually touch that piece of equipment?
I just had it where a client where the internet was down, you know, flat fee, and they got a bill from me because I went there and somebody just moved a Cat 5 cable, moved it from the WAN port to the switch. So if the router's not plugged in, the internet ain't going. So, you know, and I was like, well, why would somebody do that? Why?
Trying to be helpful.
I appreciate that, but you pay me to do it. It doesn't cost any more if I come. Just let me come.
Pay me now or pay me later. Oh, man. Oh, gosh. All right. Is there anything else we need to cover on this subject, John, that you can see?
No, but, you know, if Chris wants to fire up an email or follow up, you know, we can answer any questions next week. Or I think he's probably watching football knowing him, so he probably won't call in. But, Chris, if you get this, call.
All right. Cool. Sounds good. All right, so let's take another quick break, and then we'll go into our next section. All right, to support this show, if you want, you can go to, or I would suggest you go to patreon.com/computer repair podcast. If we have helped you, if we've entertained you, if we are doing a good service for those that are in the computer repair business, the IT field, then, you know, throw a couple bucks this way. Now, what that will give you is we have a secret Facebook group that you can, and I know not everybody's on Facebook, but I had to pick a platform where most people were. So if you are on Facebook and you are a Patreon supporter at this point, all I need you to do is log into your Patreon account again. And all you need to do is basically move yourself up to, you can change rewards on there. I think there's a lot of people that were on there before I created the reward. And you can basically change to reward status where you get the reward. And it will give you instructions on what to do to become a part of the secret Facebook group. So if you are a Patreon supporter from the past and are still currently giving, go ahead and take care of that, and we'll get you in that group. And it's going to be a safe group environment where people can ask questions. There's going to be no controversial topics or anything like that. As a matter of fact, probably one of the first things you want to do in coming into the group is actually read the rules. So we're going to be I don't want to say hard on that, but we want it to be a certain type of environment that I think a lot of other groups don't have. So that's why I created this, and that's why it is a secret Facebook group. So go ahead and do that. But if you want to become a part of that, just go and give some money to the Patreon account there, and we can get you set up in that. So moving forward, you'll be able to get the information immediately and become a part of the secret Facebook group. But I want to thank our newest Patreon supporter, Rick Smith. Thank you, Rick, for giving to the show. We definitely appreciate it. And we appreciate all of our Patreon supporters for your continued support. So hopefully we'll be able to give back and do some things inside that group.
And just so people know, Jeff, on that topic, it's you don't have to give anymore. So if you're giving a buck, you're still giving a dollar. You're just changing the group that you're in on Patreon. So you've gone from no reward to reward for the same whatever you're giving now.
Exactly. Yeah, there's no extra money. And basically, I've said it at the basically, you just give the dollar per episode, and that gets you in the group. So it's $4 a month. And, you know, give up a Starbucks or a Red Bull or something. I don't know.
And Rick, no, not Red Bull. And Rick suggested that there was a secret handshake, and I did tell him it was fist bump, wobble, wobble, twist, twist, slap, high five, loop finger, fist bump. So if you keep that in mind moving in, you'll be able to get in.
There you go. Awesome. Okay.
Thanks for bringing that up, Rick. I didn't want to forget that.
All right, let's go ahead and move into our, we're going to move into our other section here. Let's answer some emails and take some phone calls. Phone lines are open. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. Let's go ahead and answer that first email. All right, this is a follow-up email from the last couple of weeks, and this is talking about the Windows 10 update that was stuck at 87%. It says, hello, Jeff and y'all at Podnuts. Yes. That was y'all. This is an Asus desktop computer that does not have the repair diagnostics in the system. What I'm using for testing the whole computer is PC Doctor version 9.5, the same one that you bought about 6 months ago. Here's an update to the Windows 10 update. I did re-download Windows 10 and started to install it, and the same thing happens. It stops at 87% while doing the updates. I did pull the memory and move it, and still no joy. I replaced the power supply with a spare one that I have on hand. The installed power supply was a 350 watt, and the test power supply is 500 watt. It would not power on the computer. Now, I have some bad news. I switched the power supply back, turned it on for a second, and then off. Just long enough to power on the fans. It did this with both power supplies. So I guess we will never know what caused the issue. Was it memory, or the slot, or the power supply? I did this when I got home, and after listening to Podnuts at about 11:30 p.m. on a Sunday night, and by 12:30 a.m. Monday, the computer was dead. Yeah, you probably shouldn't do this stuff late at night. To Bradford, thank you for the heart that you sent out. To John, you said that this will make for a bad week. Nope, you're wrong. Just a bad hour. To Jeff, one way to learn is off of someone else. Oops. We all do the same, and that's why we listen to Podnuts, Mike Tech Show, etc. Thank you for all your help, and keep up the good work. Robert Eiler from Robert's Computer Service. Thank you again for the follow-up, Robert. Now, I will say this. There's a couple things that, and without having, it's hard to diagnose something in your mind versus actually having it in front of you. But I will say, as far as a power supply, you actually could have a bad power supply, even though it is your test power supply, or even if it's a brand new power supply. The other thing too is, a lot of times, when you're hooking it up to the motherboard, you have your 24-pin connection, which I think is standard. It used to be 20-pin, now it's 24. But usually, even on the HP, Dells, et cetera, they still have a 4. And I don't think I've seen it on these particular models. I don't think I've seen a separate 8-port, but they will have another 4-port connection to the motherboard. So that's one of the things you want to make sure you check and make sure that all the plugs were plugged in. Now, I wouldn't worry about plugging in the CD-ROM or anything like that, but everything that's on the motherboard, you definitely need to have plugged in. And the way you can test it is, if you have another system that's laying around that you know is a good working system, you can take that power supply, put it on there, see if it works. But I'm leaning towards, this was kind of a weird issue, and if it was a power supply issue, because I think he talked about a couple weeks ago a beep code that he was hearing that the power supply was going bad, I'm just going to say, you know, I would try a different power supply because I don't think the computer's dead. Now, there is a chance that the motherboard is dead, and again, I don't know if there was any shock therapy going on or what was going on. But these are just some of the things to check and see if that fixes the problem. But the 87% still boggles my mind. You guys have anything that you could think of other than what I've talked about already?
You know, we know how we all feel about power supply testers. I might suggest if you run into this a lot, you might get a digital power supply tester, which is a little bit more advanced, because that maybe that would at least give you some voltage readings, you know, versus just a standard one, which might help you with that. In this case, my first guess, if he's having that, is maybe even something with the CPU or something going on, because it's kind of bizarre what he's explaining. The other thing I ran into, my bench was full, so I ran over to my test machine, and my dock, instead of plugged in USB, is plugged in via the... The IDE connector on the side of the machine. Help me out. What is it? External. Come on. What's the term? You know what I'm talking about. Anyways, it's not USB. But then if you boot from that with a hard drive in your dock, you can use the onboard diagnostics, like the Dell diagnostics. You will actually just think you have another hard drive in there. So you can use that to test the hard drives as well.
USATA.
Thank you. High five, Brett. All right, so if you have your dock plugged into an eSATA port, you'll get the full SATA diagnostics of another drive on there. So that'll come in handy if you don't have, you know, if you need a second opinion, you can use the built-in diagnostics, even on a laptop, to do that off an eSATA port.
The other thing, yeah, I was thinking about CPU, and one of the things you might want to check is actually pulling the heatsink off and checking the paste underneath, seeing if it's dried and cracked, because I've seen that happen before. That's one of the things you can definitely check out to see if the CPU is actually stopping. And I would probably not even plug the hard drive in, because a lot of times when you're doing a diagnostic, at least this is my experience, I will unplug everything because all I really want to do is just get into the BIOS. If I can get into the BIOS without anything plugged in, and then I can start plugging things in one by one and figuring out if something is actually shorted. Because even though the hard drive might have passed for whatever reason, and I've had this happen before, where something was still not right with the hard drive. It was just acting up. But I know he said he put in a different hard drive. It could be the SATA cable. You know, that's another one too that will cause all kinds of problems. And I've had to replace those. Those are like candy. They do not last.
So really what you're saying is boil it down to the bare basics. And JD brought up the power supply. The CPU in the chat as well. But boil down to the basics, get to some point where you can just get the PC started. So you're going to be talking really power supply, motherboard, CPU, and a stick of RAM. And then move on from there.
And then also I like to have, if I pull all the RAM and boot it one time, I want to make sure that, do I get those beep, like the right beep code that says the memory's bad? Because there's no RAM in it. So then the BIOS is the BIOS functioning properly? We'll tear it down to like. I've probably gone through the process that he's gone through. He's like replaced. He's tried a different hard drive. He's tried a different this. He's tried a different that. And then you go, no, okay, well, stop. Just tear it down, and then at some point, so I think he's in a tough spot because I usually have similar hardware sitting around, and I can just take that hard drive out and boot it up into another machine. And yeah, maybe some drivers will have to get updated or whatever because it's in a new environment. But for the most part, Windows will boot up. But if he's kind of midway through an update, that's trying to, like, you probably don't want to jolt the system like that. Because that might freak out Windows Update, and then it's hosed. You might as well, and
you brought up a good thing, too, right there, Bradford. Have we talked about that? Has he checked this for his latest BIOS? Has he checked the firmware on everything in there, especially on the SSDs or anything that he's using?
That's another good point, yeah. Yeah.
I've even done it, you know, over the time I've been doing it, where I've just reflashed the exact same BIOS. and had things kind of just kind of, I don't know what you call it, fix themselves.
Right. That's, you know, BIOSes, I don't even think that's a word, but anyways, they can get
biases.
Bice. I don't know. Anyways, I know they can get corrupted. So it does happen. Now that could mean, again, the other thing too is make sure that when you're checking the motherboard, you're looking for bulging caps, capacitors. You know, it's a little long round things on there. And a lot of times if you can see those are starting to bulge, then that means you probably have some bad capacitors and not everything is writing, you know, working on that board correctly. And a capacitor is basically all they do is store energy to move from one point to another. Really the simplest way to say it. All right, so hopefully, let us know if you feel, I know it sucks trying to take all this time and effort into one machine, but if you end up doing some more with it, definitely let us know. I would love to hear what went on with it. All right. So, let's see. Email number 2 says, hello, I recently received an Asus G73 gaming laptop from a friend. They gave it to me with Windows 10 already installed. It worked for the most part. Oh, that's when you say it worked for the most part. Woo.
What's that mean?
Yeah. I started it up today and it loaded up. That's good. I tried to put in a DVD and it wouldn't load. I could hear the DVD spinning, but the laptop wasn't reading it. That's pretty common as far as those DVD writers and players, they go out all the time. They actually stop working. All right, I came back to it later and tried to wake it up, but the screen stayed black. The screen was off. The computer was awake, but the screen was black. I thought this was some crazy glitch, so I turned it off. Then I turned it back on again. It's a good place to start. Turn it off and turn it on again. This time, Windows didn't load. It gave me the black screen, but the screen was on. So what he's talking about, I believe, is the backlight was on it, but the screen was black, nothing on there. I restarted it again and told me that Windows had an error while trying to load. Yeah, it's not good. Gave me the option of going into advanced settings or restarting it. So I restarted. Then it started updating. Ooh, yeah, it's kind of rough. Then it froze. Oh, gosh. I let it sit for 30 minutes, and when I came back, it was still frozen. So I turned it off. Ooh, that's not good. I was thinking it was a problem with the AMD drivers. It has an Intel processor, but has an AMD Mobile 5000 series GPU. What makes me suspect that it is a driver is because a friend I received it from doesn't know the difference between a gaming laptop and a normal laptop, and probably didn't know that if you updated the OS, you also need to update the GPU drivers. I hope you guys can tell me what the problem is and how to fix it. Thank you for your time. Sincerely, Jonathan. Jonathan, first of all, yeah, actually on the Windows OS, especially Windows 10, probably even Windows 7 and above, the generic Windows driver for running your GPU will be perfectly fine. The only time you run into a problem most of the time, now it's not all the time, but most of the time, is when you actually are doing something, some heavy processing, gaming, 3D rendering or something like that, where you actually have to have the manufacturer's GPU driver loaded. So the Windows driver will run most of that stuff, especially your 2D stuff, no problem. So I think you have other issues with this laptop. And it almost sounds to me like a hard drive. Do you guys agree?
A couple things. I think it would be really random if this happened, but this was more of a gaming laptop.
Yeah, Asus G73.
So Anthony, just this weekend, we were working on something, and he was mentioning there was one piece of gaming hardware, and I think it was graphics card, but I don't remember what it was. But he was talking about how it needed to, the Windows 10 drivers don't work, and he actually has to roll it back, and he has done this on multiple instances of the same piece of hardware, and so. Somehow they're able to get a driver to work that way. So it could be something like that, but that's kind of obscure. And if this laptop's new to him, right? Like he hasn't had it for very long. Maybe just wipe it start over with a fresh install, double check your BIOS, get it current, double check the, now you've got a chance to do drivers and find the drivers correctly and do that. I mean, you know, that might be the way to go. And plus, if it's a laptop, then that means there should be a place where, on the ASUS page, where you can go get the right drivers specifically for that model. You know, that's where I would, that's actually where I would start, which sucks because you're wiping everything out that you might have done in the last week or two, but I'd probably would just do that.
Yeah, but if it's not working, it's not working. The other thing too is, in my opinion, usually when people give stuff away, it's usually because there's something wrong with it. Sorry, Jonathan, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but usually that's the case. So, but yeah, I would definitely start. There's no problem with starting from the get-go and just wiping that thing, reloading Windows 10 back up.
It might be really old-fashioned, but because the problem's so weird, I might even do like a repartitioning on the drive, like get it so that there's no chance that anything old on the hard drive survives when I start over. I want to blow everything out.
Okay.
But that's an old school technique that I learned from like Windows 3.1 that I still use because I'm old.
Well, hopefully, let us know how it turns out. Let us know what you ended up doing to fix the problem. So, or if it's fixable at all, but, yeah, very interesting. Yeah. It is really hard to diagnose things when you're not, all of us have processes. Most of us don't follow them, but even when your process is in your head, you still do certain things to make sure that stuff is not going wrong.
Before I started really working on computers, like a lot, obviously I've been working on computers most of my life, but I took an automotive electronic repair class, and the instructor was just his mantra, do what's easy and what's cheap first, and then move on from there. And sometimes cheap means less expensive in terms of time. Maybe it's not necessarily money. It's like what's going to be kind of like your quickest way to get to the bottom of it. So I kind of follow that now too with computers.
Right. Sound advice. All right. Let's move on to our last email.
Hang on 1 second. I've been corrected. It's ASUS, not ASUS.
Actually, it's if you take the word Pegasus, it's assess. Is what I was told many, many moons ago.
That's not what YouTube is saying. Or Chris in the chat. So I referred him back to Dr. Seuss to find out.
There you go. ASUS.
Bless you.
Exactly. Gesundheit. Okay. So third email says, hi, Jeff and crew. Yesterday, somebody asked me to recommend a printer. I usually would go to PCMag.com or PC World or CNET. Check on Amazon for reviews. The websites PCMag and PC World are filled with ads and make it hard to find reviews. There must be a better way to filter out good hardware. Any suggestions? Thanks for all the information and sharing it with all of us. Happy Veterans Day. Jeff, thanks to you and all who are serving and have served. Jerry Bransfield. Thank you, Jerry, for the email. Where do we get recommendations, speaking of recommendations, for things like printers? Because I agree, a lot of times going and looking through these reviews on some of these websites now is just horrible. And they're all being bought and paid for, in my opinion.
So if someone, and this happens to me a lot. So someone comes to me and says, hey, I need a good recommendation on a printer. Well, I've made contacts with people who work on printers at various levels. So I talk to them and then they'll give me a recommendation. So the printer that I have sitting in my office here was recommended to me by the guy that sells both sells, maintains printers and provides toner to small businesses. And so, hey, what is the one that you've got to fix the least and people complain about the least and give you the best results and has a good deal on toner? And he came up with a Brother. It's a Laser L2700DW. So now probably 4 or 5 of my customers have one at their desk and I haven't ever had to apologize for making that recommendation. And generally, from just from what I've seen with the smaller utilization, not the big MFC kind of machines, but those, you know, a desktop kind of rated machine. I like the Brother multifunctions, but beyond that, then I guess there's like PC Per, which I just sent you the link. I just tend to call people that are an expert in that field and ask them. I don't actually rely on online reviews all that much.
I can't disagree with that. For my, I think cheap is the wrong word, but for my cheap printer options, I definitely stick with the Brother because they have some great administration tools as well for network administration and updating firmware and automating all of that. And I think they're cheap enough that they're almost throwaway, which is kind of sad in a way, but that the 2360 you're talking about is a great desktop printer, just a little workhorse, and the consumables are pretty cheap and all that. If I have somebody that wants to step up that has a lot higher mean time between failure, I look at probably the Kyocera product line, and I go to one of my partner vendors to get those. But, you know, as far as where to go, I like PC Per. I think that's a great place for you gaming guys that they review all sorts of stuff. Do they do a lot of printers? I don't know that. If I was going to do that, if I was going to look for that, I might wander into like the Spiceworks group or go into ASCII's group or someplace like that and just simply ask, hey, what are you guys doing in the small business line for printers? You know, I think everybody pretty much makes the same quality printer now, you know, on the level that we're talking about for small business. But I really think it's the Brother software that stands out. I mean, you're not downloading a 600 meg installer like you do with HP printers. It comes with tons of crapware along with the printer driver. So, and you know, that's just my two cents.
HP's got a bad rap for finding ways to waste consumables and overcharge for them, and whether it's deserved or not.
Right.
I feel like it is, but I don't know that for sure.
And Jeff, I hate to say this, but this might be the second time in 2 weeks. You're right. ASUS takes its name from Pegasus.
Listen, John. Normally I would say I know, but I don't even have to say that anymore because I already know. Anyways, I am smarter than I look. As far as printers go, I've used the Brother. I've used HP, and I don't like HP just because their ink in their cartridges with the electronics in it is so expensive. It's just ridiculous. I started using, this was years ago, the Epson Workforce Pro. If you're going to use an inkjet printer. Now, if you're going to use a laser, then yeah, probably your Brother is going to be the brand to go with. But as far as for getting color, quality color, and all that kind of stuff, and having ink that just comes in a plastic container, and you can get huge ink things for, you know, relatively cheap compared to some of the other brands, and I can literally get thousands of print jobs out of my printer. And it's been a great printer so far, but I'm with John too. I think a lot of them, they only last so long, and they're all pretty much built the same. A lot of plastics, things wear out, electronics wear out. A lot of the higher end printers come with print heads that you can actually remove and replace. But the problem is they generally cost so much that you might as well just buy a new printer. And for a lot of my residentials, a lot of those people, I go, you know what? It's going to be $70 for a new head. We can get you a decent printer for, you know, the amount of time that you're printing for $70. And so from that standpoint, I don't know that there's a best solution out there. Now, as far as PC Per or PC Perspective, it is PCPer.com, but the website is PC Perspective, and it's Ryan Shroud over there. He does a lot of reviews on, or his team does a lot of reviews on hardware. And nowadays, when somebody asks me for a computer build, I just go over there and I grab the parts because they've got a hardware leaderboard and they've got a small, better, best, and bestest. I can't remember the things. But anyways, they've got where you can basically pick and see what are the most popular things right now, CPU, memory, motherboards, so on and so forth. And you can kind of, and that's how I've built my computer probably for the last, I don't know, 6 years or so, maybe even longer than that. But I usually just go there, look at their stuff, and okay, here's what I want. I order, you know, hard drives, all that kind of stuff. And then basically whatever I have left over, I'll go ahead and do that. So as far as finding a place for reviews, I'm going to say that, yeah, unless you know a printer shop or something like that that deals with this stuff on a regular basis and what they're seeing as far as what's being worked on it at this point, I don't know. Again, it's like one of those things. They're all about the same. It's just you gotta weigh they all had the pros and cons, so you gotta weigh those pros and cons and see. But as far as trying to find a filter online, the internet is big and vast, and there's more garbage on there than there's probably is good nowadays, and I don't see it getting any better, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, this kind of seconds what I already said, where I will ask someone who is presumably an expert. And this is not a plug for the show necessarily, like exactly. But I feel like sometimes the reason I don't need to go digging so hard for a review is because I've been listening to the Podnuts Network, where people that are specifically hands-on with something will talk about it. Since it started, I've listened to every episode of Podnuts from back when Steve Cherubino was doing it up till now. The Daily Show, I listen to the Pro Show, I listen to this show. And you've got people working in the field hands-on with something, sharing their experience with it. Well, then, you know, there you go. That was the person who you wanted to talk to. And I heard about it. And then that stuff all sort of gets osmosized into my brain. And then, you know, now when I'm looking at a review, or if I'm asking somebody, I already have, I don't even know where it came from, but I have a perspective on that thing already. So listen to the show. Shows.
I still do that nowadays. I listen to the other shows and I get pieces of information. Mike Tech Show, he talks about a certain piece of equipment, you know, maybe Synology NASAs or something like that. And I, you know, piques my interest and I go, maybe that's the NAS I need to be using or whatever, and, you know, go check it out. And so I totally agree with you. Yeah, this is where we're using the stuff that we use. And I think for the most part, a lot of it stays the same, but I would say that probably stuff changes a little bit over time, where maybe we find a bad batch of printers or computers and we go, yeah, don't use that model. Maybe we're not worried about the brand, but don't use that model anymore because there's many problems with it and we're moving on to this product or this service.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, the whole reason we listen to these shows is just to gather information. You know, I pick on Mike. You know, maybe I don't agree with everything he ever says, but he definitely brings out different ideas and different thoughts based on the experience he has. Same with, you know, what I'm saying. You may not agree with everything I say, but, you know, at least you're exposed to it. You may never have heard of Arachnus or Calyptics or something before. I listen to the show too, or even the other guests you have on, Jeff. I learn from something from them all the time. The other thing to remember too is on that PC Purr is he does a podcast. So if you're into the MIPS, MOPS, FLOPS, and whatever else you gaming guys do, I mean, he goes, that's it. You know, if you got the time, that's a pretty geeky podcast. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, good podcast over there. He also does one for where they kind of are, they talk about it on the Twit Network too. This Week in Hardware or something like that.
I think it's This Week in Hardware.
Okay. Anyways, you can check that out. All right, Brad, why don't you let people know maybe one last bit of advice and where they can find you at?
Don't give advice where it hasn't been asked for. I don't know. I didn't have a good one, but that's actually not a bad one. And then you guys can find me at my website on the contact page, ttcscomputerservices.com, or you can just email me, Brad, at ttcscomputerservices.com. You know what? Better advice. Think about your domain name before you pick it, because try to say it out loud to someone over the phone. yeah, pick four letters that sound the same as far as like they require you to say Tango, Tango, Charlie, Sam. Yeah, don't do that. That's bad.
That's good. I like that piece of parting advice there. All right, John, and why don't you give us one parting thought and let people know where they can find you at?
I'm sticking to my guns. It's ASUS. I mean, I'm really thinking, I mean, I've been Googling it. We're battling it back and forth in the chat. I mean, that's how the CEO says it's, you know, I could really care less, but it's ASUS.
Oh.
Or ASUS. I mean, I don't even have one.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I don't even have one. So. All right. No, you guys, where do I want to have people see me? Yeah, let's meet in the Ninja MSP forums and talk there. How's that sound? There it goes. Ninja RMM. Yeah.
Oh, well, appreciate you guys coming out and sharing this great topic with us and talking about it. All right. You guys can come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnets.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. Join in on the conversation by calling in live and hanging out in the chat room. There's lots of stuff going on there today. You can also send an email to podnets@podnets.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-697-0162. We have audio available over at podnets.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can be notified when the show is live by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnets, the Computer Repair Podcast.